finding my way to the ship's bathroom, but no. If I was about to die, I wanted to see it coming. Or maybe I did not, because ahead of us, the exploded stellar matter was spread in a band so thick that it blotted out the stars. It was like a wall that filled our view screen. So much burning matter was there, with only the barest glimpse of space beyond. Well, I said, there is no getting through that. You've done well, but we have to stop. No, wait, said Solo. There's a gap. I looked where he pointed, and I saw a small opening in the flow of fiery death. But it was closing rapidly as five different masses of blazing star stuff all converged to seal it off. Solo, I said, you have done well, but not even the fastest ship in the galaxy can get through what lies ahead of us before it closes. You must stop. Agreed Chewbacca. I'm not giving up, said Solo. Majo, I asked, are your Novian rubies worth dying for? Because we are about to die if we continue. Some things are worth dying for, yes, she said. And I wondered, was she really talking about the rubies? Or something else? That unique woman who did not think she was unique. I started to reply, but Solo cut me off. No stopping now, he said. Trust me on this, Chewie. And then he aimed the ship right for the center of the converging threats. The opening was getting smaller and smaller. It was the end. Big Mok Mok, I cried. I'm sorry. All five burning masses converged on our path. Vroom. And suddenly, we were jumping to hyperspace. Abort, abort, I cried. I knew that the mass cast by all that matter would pull us right back into real space, where we would die a fiery death as we smashed into the burning wall. But we did not die. We made the jump. And suddenly, the Falcon was flying smoothly along in that kaleidoscope tunnel of swirling lights. Marjo and I looked at each other, blinking in confusion. I touched my chest. Everything was where it was supposed to be, my head on top, my feet on bottom, all my middle bits in place. I am in one piece, I said in amazement. All of our pieces are where they belong. At least I think so. Chewbacca started to laugh quietly. Solo sat back in his chair with the smuggest of all smug grins. I don't understand, said Marjo. How could we make the jump? Why didn't that wall of stellar matter create mass shadows? Oh, it did, lady, said Solo. And suddenly, I understood. Han Solo, you are a gambler of insane proportion. What did he do? Said Majo. What did he do? What did he do? He picked the exact point where the gravity of all those burning objects was in perfect balance. We were able to enter hyperspace and stay there, even though it was full of mass shadows, because he found the one spot where they canceled each other out. I looked at Solo. He was still grinning like the proverbial Tuca cat that had eaten the Bulla bird. You had to time that exactly right, I said. 1 meter off in any direction, and we would not have jumped. And then we would not have had the speed to make it through the gap before it closed. We would have been pulverized into a million little pieces. Hey, said Solo. I got us here, didn't I? Did you? I asked. In answer, Solo dropped us out of hyperspace. And there in front of us hung a radiant red orb. The planet Guangdin. We made it, said Majo. We made it to the Undervaults in time. She started to give Solo a hug, but then she turned and hugged the Wookiee instead. Hey, what about me? Said Solo. He looked slightly stung. I laid a hand on his shoulder. It may hurt you to hear this, my friend, I said, but you are less huggable than a Wookiee. Solo's mouth began to make funny shapes. But in my years leading the Onaka gang, I had learned that a good leader needs to move things along. "Well, my friends," I said, clapping my hands, "it looks like profits are on the horizon." But as we made our approach to that new world, the horizon and everything before it began to look very strange. The uniform red of the planet, glimpsed at a distance, did not seem to change as we got closer and closer. Amazingly, the surface of Guangdin was featureless and smooth. "It's like a giant red pearl," I said. "And somebody has been polishing it." "A big crimson ball," said Marjo. added Chewbacca. "Or a drop of blood," said Solo. "I like my metaphor better," I said. "Still, that is not cloud cover we are seeing. That is the planet's surface. But I see no mountains, no hills, no rivers, no cities." "There aren't any topological features at all," said Solo. "What kind of place have you brought us to now, Marjo?"
"Just fly to the coordinates I gave you," she said. "You'll see."
"But what is it?" I asked. "Is this a vast ocean? If so, where are the waves, the ripples, the happy sea creatures bobbing up and down in watery joy?" Marjo gave me a look.
"I thought you at least would have been to the undervaults before," she said.
"No," I explained. "This is my first time to Guangdin."
"But you knew about it, about the vaults?"
"I knew how hard they were to get into," I said. "That does not mean I had visited them. My dear, you do not get to be a successful pirate by stealing things that are hard to get. No, you steal the easy pickings. As my sweet mother used to say, the easier something is to steal, the more it is asking to be stolen." Marjo shook her head, making me wonder again about her past. That woman who could fight, who had been to Guangdin but not Dandu, and who knew some surprising things but not others, and who seemed to have more virtue than her declared profession would suggest. What was she hiding? What was she not telling us? But then we saw other ships on the approach. They were all heading as we were, to a spot near the equator of that strange world. We fell in a growing line, and then we saw another odd sight. The ships descended as they reached their destination. But as each vessel was about to touch down, an enormous hole opened in the surface of the world. It was smooth, without any sign of a hinge or a seam. The hole just grew in the red ground, like the gap a bubble might make as it was rising out of a thick liquid, or a tear in the band of rubber that had been stretched too thin. Then, as each ship passed below, the sides of the hole would rush in and close. Glop! Glop! It looked too uncomfortably, as if the planet were eating them.
"This is not ground, is it?" I observed.
"No," said Marjo. "It's biological."
"Don't tell me the planet is alive," said Solo. "I hate living planets. I don't want to go to a living planet."
"No, it's nothing like that," said Marjo. "At least not exactly. You see, Guangdin is entirely covered in a biological sea. It's composed of trillions of tiny organisms working together to create a whole. They stretch across the entire world, forming a dense, viscous liquid. It's like the planet is wrapped in a membrane."
More ships disappeared into the sea. Glop, glop, glop.
"And we're putting down in that?" said Solo. "I just got the ship cleaned."
"You did?" I said, "because I cannot tell."
Solo harumphed, but Marjo spoke before he could respond further.
"You don't need to worry," she said. "The core of the planet is rock. The force fields push the sea back so we can get to the undervaults beneath. They act as a barrier, both shielding the undervaults from stellar radiation and making Guangdin very hard to visit without permission.
And we have permission? Asked Solo.
We do now, said Majo, lifting the key. If we weren't carrying this, we'd never even get inside. She tapped Solo on the shoulder. Take us down.
You're the boss, lady.
And then we were descending toward this great expanse of red pudding. Are you sure you have never been to Guangdin? No? That surprises me. It does. Well, let me tell you. It is an experience. As the membrane pulled apart, we could see up close that it was not as uniform as it looked. There were colors and shapes, all the little creatures working together, like the coral of some oceans, only stickier. And we were descending through it. But it was not very deep. And then the walls around us changed to the black of a shaft carved into rock. Blinking, winking lights guided us into a vast cavern where we saw an enormous underground spaceport. Solo and Chewbacca set the Falcon down, and we assembled in the starboard airlock, preparing to disembark. Untold riches awaited us, just sitting there for the taking. Or so we thought. I felt a hand on my shoulder.
One moment before we go, said Majo. I want you to know, you've all been wonderful. Really. I guess I thought that a band of smugglers and pirates wouldn't be so likable. But you've all been really great. I'll never forget you for your help.
You sound as if you're saying goodbye, I said. And although I did not say it aloud, I also thought that once again, she did not sound like a person who was experienced in living outside the law. Then I saw her reach a forefinger to tap a slender black band she wore on her opposite wrist. I had a flash of suspicion. I recognized that Majo had touched each one of us in the past few minutes. Did she put something on us? I had less than an instant to react. My hand went to my shoulder. My fingers just brushed something small and round, adhered to the fabric of my shirt. What had she stuck on me? I gripped it and pulled, trying to rip away whatever she had placed on me.
I am, she said, and I want you to know that I am truly sorry for this.
Majo Relu's finger depressed the wristband. I felt a shock like 100 lightning bolts coursing through my body. I was aware that Han Solo and Chewbacca were also doing the electricity dance beside me. We dropped to the floor, every muscle in our bodies convulsing. From my new position on the ground, I could only see the furry back of a Wookiee in front of me. But I heard Majo lower the boarding ramp. Then her boots stopped in front of my face.
I thought if I worked with terrible people, she said, I wouldn't feel so guilty about double-crossing them. I guess I was wrong.
And then she walked down the ramp and away, leaving us utterly incapacitated and totally betrayed.
Chapter 7 Zappity Zap Zap.
I was the first to come around. Now, you might imagine the Wookiee would have had that position. After all, Chewbacca was bigger than the two of us combined. And he had all that fuzzy stuff to insulate him from the zappity-zap-zap. But you will recall that I had tried to pull the shocker off of my shoulder just as Majo was thumbing it on. So I did not get quite the same dose as the others. And we Weequay are naturally thick-skinned to begin with. So it was I who shook off the shock before the others. I tore the little round zappy device from my shoulder. It felt good to crunch it under my boot. Ah, but my head still hurt, and my body. It ached everywhere, like I had been trampled by a herd of scalders, and then trampled again. But I had to get up. I rose to my knees, and that was when I saw that my companions were still out cold. In fact, I think Solo was making little snoring noises. I don't think you can blame me for having an idea. I mean, there we were, already at the boarding ramp, and the ramp was lowered, and they were asleep, dead to the world. It would not be hard to do. I could just roll them down to the ground, tumble, 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 and when they awoke, they would not even know that it was me who had done this thing. Their ship would be gone bye-bye, and Majo Rilu, the woman who had attacked them, she would be the obvious culprit. No suspicion would fall on me, because they had seen me be zappity-zap-zapped as well. Of course, I would not get the Novian rubies, no, but the Millennium Falcon would be mine. And that, my friend, was a prize worth nearly as much as any Novian ruby, possibly even more. As my sweet mother used to say, when the galaxy hands you such an obvious gift, it would be rude not to take it. So I grabbed Solo first, and I shoved him as gently as time allowed. And I winced only a little bit as I watched him tumbling down the ramp. Over and over he rolled, bumpity-bumpity-bumpity, and then he was off the ship. One more to go, and my ship it would be. Oh, but Chewbacca was harder. The Wookiee weighed a ton. I could not send him tumbling down bumpity-bumpity. I could not even flop him over. So I ended up grabbing him by the feet and putting my back into it, dragging him as best I could. It was slow going, let me tell you. And my poor back hurt so much. But it would be worth it if I could just get him off the ship. And then, before we had even made it halfway, he made a noise. He said, it was the kind of noise you make in the morning when you don't want to get up. But, oh dear, the zappity-zappity was wearing off. You can imagine the trouble I would be in if Chewbacca came to as I was in the very process of stealing his ship and throwing him off it. You don't have to be an expert on Wookiees to know that the results would not be pretty. I had to do something. Go back to sleepy, sleepy, I said. You are a sleepy Chewie, a very sleepy Chewie. He said, and his eyelids began to flutter. Oh, no. What could I do? I was desperate. How to get him to stay asleep? I had a thought. I began to sing softly, a lullaby, like my sweet mother might have sung to me if she had not been so busy teaching me to pick pockets. Hush, little Wookiee, don't say a word. Hondo's going to toss you off this bird. Said Chewbacca. And if this bird can fly your way, this will be Hondo's lucky day. Chewbacca's eye popped open. Uh-oh, I said. I began to pull faster and sing faster. Hush, little Wookiee, don't you cry. Hondo just wants to say bye-bye. A great furry hand reached out and caught the hydraulic lift of the ramp. I tugged his hairy legs as hard as I could, but his grasp was firm. And if you... wait before I flee... Chewbacca's eyes were fully open. They took in the situation, and then they lit up with angry fire. Please, please, little Wookiee, don't kill me! And then I found myself dangling in the air. In mere seconds, Chewbacca had hoisted me aloft and was holding me up like I was nothing but a little rag doll. The grip on my throat tightened. You cannot blame a guy for trying, I squeaked. Chewbacca's growl was low and angry. Okay, apparently you can. Chewbacca growled some more. This really was the end, then. I wondered which of my limbs he would tear off first. You know, I said, resigned to my fate, I used to be someone. I had a crew. The Onaka gang. I had ships. A tank. I had a beautiful base on Florum. I had the respect of my people, even when they were trying to betray me.
I was Hondo Onaka, Pirate Scourge, and I had the will and the ability to take what I wanted from the galaxy. And what do I have now? I am alone. All alone. Without even a Kowakian monkey lizard on my shoulder. Sighed deeply. It is a beautiful ship. I thought, with a ship like that, well, a man could have a second chance. He could find the will to start again. He could go anywhere, be anything. Chewbacca glared into my goggles. If you don't mind, I said, I will close my eyes. Because I really don't want to see this coming. The final, hopefully not too painful, moments of the once great Hondo Onaka. I closed my eyes, and I hung in the air, listening to the Wookiee's angry breath. But I did not die. And then my feet touched the surface of the boarding ramp. Cautiously, I opened my eyes. Carefully, I felt myself to make sure everything was still in place. My head to my neck to my body to my limbs. Miraculously, they were all where they were supposed to be. I don't understand, I said. I tried to steal your special ship. It was the same Wookiee proverb he had quoted earlier. The one about the tree that joins its roots with others underground. He was trying to tell me it was not the ship that was special. I stared at him in surprise, not sure what to say. Fortunately, I didn't get the chance. What's going on? Behind us, Han Solo was stirring. He sat up and touched his head. Oh, I don't feel so good. Then he slowly got to his feet. What happened? I looked at the Wookiee. Chewbacca stared back at me. He waited to see what I would say. Majo Rilu stunned us, I said. I woke first, and I hesitated. Still, Chewbacca didn't say anything. I was trying to rouse you both so that we could go quickly in pursuit of that double-crossing scoundrel of a thief. It was a lie, of course. Solo studied me for a moment, and I wondered if he could see through me. Then he nodded. Well then, what are you two standing around for? He said. We owe her one. Let's go pay her back with interest. With that, Solo went charging down the ramp into the Guangding docks. I turned to Chewbacca, and I gave the Wookiee a grateful look. But he shouldered past me and followed Solo. You know, I could have turned and run back into the ship right then. I could have slammed the boarding ramp closed and stolen the ship after all, right then and there. But of course, Chewbacca knew that. That was why he went first, and left me alone with the Falcon. And that, of course, is why I followed. Well, I have never been one to dwell on the past, not with a new exciting world to explore. There was vengeance to be had, and still the promise of Novian rubies, if we could catch up with Majo. Despite all that had occurred, the day was looking up. We made our way to an exit corridor. It was wide, with a ribbed and rounded ceiling, like being in a giant throat. And right down the middle of the corridor was a bright green line. It was maybe half a meter in width, with spots of various colors dotted every few meters. I wondered what their significance was. Then, as we hurried down the corridor, I saw a being approaching. It was large, nearly the size of a small speeder. It crawled on the ground with one long, slimy, muscle-like foot, and on its back was an enormous shell, as big as a jar was hot. From its head, a dozen eyes bobbed on the end of a cluster of tentacles. I approached the creature. It stopped directly in front of us. "Greetings," I said. "I am Hondo Onaka, and these ruffians,
excuse me, these distinguished gentlemen are my associates. I assume you are the Guangdin Welcoming Committee? The creature did not say anything, just continued to stare at me with his bundle of eyes.
Yes, yes, of course, we are in a great hurry, so I applaud your decision to dispense with all pleasantries. Can you tell me, did a human woman about so tall pass this way only recently?
Still, there was no response from the creature. I wondered if its vocoder was malfunctioning or something.
That's our ship, said Solo, pointing behind us with his thumb. She would have been running from there, fast. We need to catch her.
Nothing. No response.
Have we offended you in some way? I asked. It is difficult to know all of the local customs, but if you could just direct us to the fastest way to the undervaults...
I'm waiting for you to get out of its way, said a human male in a technician's jumpsuit who was approaching us.
What? Asked Solo.
The snail, the human said, pointing.
Do you mean my welcoming committee?
Your what?
Buddy, have you ever been on Guangdin before?
No, this is the first time I have had that pleasure.
Well, then let me introduce you to the local wildlife. This is a Guangdinian subterranean gastropod, and they aren't intelligent. At least, not as far as anybody has been able to determine.
But it came up to me. It slimed its way right over.
No, it didn't.
The human tapped the ground with his toe, indicating the spotted green line I had noticed earlier.
See these tracks? The snails make them. And then they follow them. That's all they do. All day, all night. You're in its way, and it will stay there until you get out of its way.
So these are not for disembarking visitors? They are not direction markings?
Not for anything that talks. Just for the snails.
Great, said Solo as Chewbacca laughed.
We're in a hurry, and you're wasting our time talking to a giant slug.
A snail, not a slug, I told him. Little details like that may matter. Then I turned back to the technician.
So what are they for? What do you do with them?
Nothing, he replied.
Ignore them. That's what everyone else does.
Feeling very foolish, I stepped aside. Immediately, the Guangdinian subterranean gastropod began to move forward. I turned as it passed me and watched it make its slow way down the tunnel. I saw people swerving to avoid it, but other than that, the technician was correct. No one paid the creature much attention.
Live and learn, I said.
Solo stepped close to me and spoke softly into my ear.
Live and learn, he repeated. You ever try to steal my ship again, and you'll only do one of the two.
And then he smiled and pushed past me.
Well, wasn't that interesting? We continued on through the strange tunnels. I spotted several more of the subterranean gastropods as we walked. They were everywhere, in fact. The colorful spotted ribbons of their snail tracks crisscrossing the entire underground settlement. Most folks gave them a wide berth, but I did see a group of Rhodian children actually riding on the back of one of the creatures. They were laughing and squealing and slapping it on the shell. The gastropod did not seem to mind, as far as I could tell. In fact, it didn't seem to notice them at all. But soon we came to the entrance of the undervaults, a great archway, with visitors approaching it. As we watched, the archway shimmered briefly as each person passed through. But then we saw someone, a little kitonak, suddenly bump into an invisible barrier. Instantly, security droids converged on the tubby guy, who began protesting that there was a mistake.
It's some kind of energy shield, said Solo.
How good of you to state the obvious, I replied. The key code again?
I'd bet on it, he said. So without the key, our journey was to end there. Suddenly Solo yelled,
There she is! He took off at a run. Chewbacca and I looked and we saw her too. That traitor, Majo Rilu.
Unfortunately, Solo's sudden movement caught her eye. She gave us a frightened look, and then she hurried forward, rudely pushing past a group of Togorians. Solo was almost on her, and then she passed through the portal. Solo, unfortunately, did not. Whoop! He slammed into the energy field barrier. "Come back here!" he yelled. Then he noticed the Togorian staring at him. "What's the matter?" he said. "You never seen a guy run into an invisible wall before?" I stopped beside Solo, testing the air gingerly with a finger. It felt as hard and as smooth as a stone to me. I recalled how Majo had leapt after Solo and Chewbacca when they fell between the Tolossus. Then it had been she who had made me ashamed, and yet the same woman would abandon us now. "Majo!" I called. "While I, of course, applaud your greed, there are riches enough for all of us. Please, come back for Hondo!" She turned then, briefly, and gave me a look, almost of pity. "I have a lot to make up for already," she said. "Another misdeed won't change anything." And then she turned and walked away from me. And there we were, just a few paces apart. But she might as well have been a whole galaxy away. Yelled Chewbacca. The Togorians scattered at that, so did quite a few other people. "Well, I don't want to give up either, big guy," replied Solo. "But we can't follow her without a key code. So unless you have one in that hairy coat of yours, I don't know what we can do." It was true. Things were looking desperate. But that is when Hondo Onaka does his best thinking. We just needed a new perspective. I looked around, and then I looked up, and then I looked down. There I saw the answer to our dilemma. "My friends," I smiled, "do not worry. I have an idea."
"Will I like this idea?" Solo asked.
"That depends very much on how you feel about getting slimy."
Chapter 8. Under the Shell.
"This is the worst plan I've ever heard." Han Solo was waggling his finger in my face again. I turned away from him to where a large Guangdinian sub-subterranean gastropod was patiently waiting for us to move out of its way. "If you will excuse us," I said to the snail, "we will be with you in a moment." Then I turned back to Solo and his waggly finger. "My friend, do I detect a certain loss of enthusiasm for this endeavor?"
"To lose something," he replied, "means I'd have to have it to begin with."
Laughed Chewbacca. "Yes, yes, very funny," I said. "Now, I do not think you understand the full brilliance of my idea. I will explain it again. It is very simple."
We had walked a little ways from the entrance to the undervaults, so we would not be lingering at the rousing suspicion. The three of us were standing in a nearby corridor away from the main flow of traffic. But like every corridor on Guangdin, the ever-present snails were making their steady way, doing whatever it was they did. I pointed down to the ground, and I tap-tapped my foot right on the snail trail, with its many colored dots. This one had a nice fuchsia color in the pattern. But that is immaterial. What was important was where it was headed. "This line," I said, "it runs right through the force barrier, straight through it, and continues on the other side. Now, you don't expect the gastropods to carry key codes, do you?"
"No," grumbled Solo.
"What's that?" I said. "I can't hear you."
"I'm not an idiot," he replied. "Of course the slugs don't have key codes."
"Snails, not slugs," I corrected.
Said Chewbacca.
"Exactly," I agreed. "But snails or slugs, it would be ridiculous. And yet they come and go, making their snaily way in and out. Therefore, We can conclude that they are unaffected by the barrier.
We hope. And no one pays them any attention, I continued. Everyone just moves out of their way. The locals and regular visitors to Guangdin don't even seem to notice them. Am I right?
Solo's mouth set in a tight frown.
Am I right?
Reluctantly, he nodded.
Very well, I said. Then there is our solution. Into the snail we all go. Said Chewbacca.
It is okay, my furry friend, I said. The shell is quite large, and the gastropod has no bones. You won't hurt it at all.
I don't think it was the snail he was worried about, said Solo. And then he added, I know it's not what I'm worried about.
I placed my hand on the slimy body of the snail and pushed a bit of its blubbery skin aside, exposing a gap under the shell.
After you, I politely said to Solo. He bent over. Then he straightened up again, fixing me with another of his hard looks.
Just so you know, he said, I have no confidence we could pull this off.
Well, it's like I always say, I replied with a smile. No confidence is better than none.
Solo's eyes screwed up at that.
That doesn't make it, he began to say. So I gave him a push, and he reluctantly squeezed his way under the huge shell on the back of the gastropod. He had made many oomph and oof noises, probably more than were necessary. And then his companion, the mighty Wookiee, followed. And let me tell you, getting a Wookiee to squeeze into a snail, not an easy thing. But finally it was done. Then I, Hondo, slipped under the shell. It was cramped, yes, for the three of us, but not impossibly so. And though there was a wet, mossy smell, it was not unduly unpleasant. In fact, I was surprised to see it was quite bright. The shell was a very pretty, pearlescent pink on the inside, and the light from outside glowed through the permeable calcium carbonate of it. We could feel the locomotion as the creature immediately began to move forward once I was out of his way. And on we go, I said. We slid a few centimeters down the corridor. Riding to riches, I added. A few more centimeters passed by in as many minutes. Though, of course, I continued, we are not riding very fast. We are in a snail, after all. Although the progress was excruciatingly slow, we did eventually return to the main thoroughfare. Through the thin walls of the shell, we could hear the buzz of so many conversations as people made their way into the undervaults. Then, rising above the babble of alien voices, I heard the squeal of children. Suddenly, the gastropod rocked alarmingly. Shadows moved nearby, blocking our light, and the squealing laughter of the children was all around us. Then we heard a drumming sound and saw the silhouettes of so many tiny hands slapping out discordant beats on the shell. The Rhodian children had returned. They were climbing all over our ride, laughing as they slid over the shell, and pounding, pounding, pounding. They were using us as a giant drum. Boom, ba-ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-ba-boom. It was most undignified, and it echoed through the shell like we were in the horn of a giant instrument, and the loud noise was driving the Wookiee crazy. He yelled. The drumming paused for a minute at that. I heard the whisper of surprised children. Quiet, my friend, I advised. Remember, the snails do not make any noise that we have heard. Certainly they do not roar like Wookiees.
He's right, whispered Han. Try to keep quiet there, buddy.
But that was no good. The drumming started up again.
Chewbacca roared again. again.
The children fell quiet. I looked at Solo. Snails do not shout, I said.
He shrugged. Maybe this one does.
Suddenly a mouth pressed to the shell.
Hello?
Said the Rhodian child, his voice reverberating terribly through our nautilus-shaped chamber.
Hello, Mr. Snail? Anybody in there?
Were we to be discovered so soon? Solo gave me a disgusted look. Then he spoke close to the child.
Yes,
he said. We heard a sharp intake of breath. We heard some excited squeals and more laughter.
It talks, the child said in awe. Hey, do you like kids, Mr. Snail?
I love them, growled Solo. I had 3 for breakfast. Well, the squealing took on a different tone then, but the drumming stopped, and then we heard cries of alarm and the sound of many little feet scurrying away. Well, my friend, I said, you certainly have a way with children. Perhaps it is a terrible way, but it is a way nonetheless.
Hey, they're gone, aren't they? Solo replied.
Agreed Chewbacca, relieved that the drumming had stopped. He put a finger where I think his ear must have been and shook his head to chase away the headache. Thankfully, the rest of our journey was uneventful. It took us a few more minutes, and then the snail passed through the barrier. We did not feel anything different, but the noise of conversation fell away instantly, to be replaced with that hollow silence you always find in a bank, or an abandoned starship, or maybe a Jedi temple, or a library. Obviously, I've spent more time in the first 2 of these places than the other 2, but I know what they are, and I have an excellent imagination.
Let me stick a head out and see if it is safe to disembark, I said. Then there were some awkward turnings around with ungrateful cries of,
get your foot out of my face, and such, and
then I was peeking out of the shell. The corridor we found ourselves occupying was thankfully empty, so we slipped out. And it was easier getting out than getting in, though we were left a little slimier for the effort. Solo made a face as he wiped his hand on his jacket, but Chewbacca looked very sleek and glistening.
Perhaps subterranean gastropod gel agreed with Wookiee head. I made a note to ask him later. There could be some small profit to be made one day from importing hair product to Kashyyyk. But that was an undertaking for another time. We were in the infamous undervaults. Ah, the undervaults. They were not like the rounded ribbed tunnels of the spaceport, no. Everything there had been made to appear big and imposing, with hard angles and straight lines, shining stone and gleaming metal. It was all meant to say, this is a very safe place. If you are even thinking the tiniest little bit about stealing anything from here, well, you had better be thinking of something else. Let me tell you that. Because it's not going to work. No! If that's not exactly what the architect had in mind when they designed the place, well, it's pretty close. But of course, we were thinking of stealing something. Novian rubies. Before it was stolen from us. Unfortunately, in addition to being big and imposing, the undervaults were also vast and sprawling. The tunnels went everywhere. They were a repository of gargantuan proportion. They could hide away a galaxy's worth of treasures, and they did. Oh, how I itched to know what was stored in each and every single chamber we passed. Think of the riches. Think of the wonders. Yet all of them were tantalizingly out of reach. We had one goal, one chance at 12. If we were lucky, if we were fast. We should split up and look for Marjo separately, I said. We can cover more ground that way. Or should I say, cover more underground. Solo fixed me with a decidedly untrusting eye.
You think I'm letting you out of my sight, he said. You're just as much a double-crosser as Marjo.
I placed a bomb to my heart.
You wound me terribly, Han Solo, I said. Are you going to deny it? What? No. Oh, it is true, all right, but in this you can trust me. I looked Chewbacca in the eye. I owed the Wookiee, and he knew it. And I had my pirate's honor. Your friend will tell you whether or not you can trust me, I said to Solo. And then I turned and walked away. When they did not follow, I knew that Chewbacca had vouched for me. So we split up to search for Marjo. I do not have the Force, but one does not live long in my profession unless one has a pirate's luck. And that day, it meant good fortune, because it was I who found Marjo Reelu first. She was in conversation with a clerk, who was ushering her to a wing of the Undervaults, where signs proclaimed that the smaller safety deposit boxes were kept there. I walked behind them, trying to look nonchalant and inconspicuous. Yes, I admit I tend to walk with a bit of swagger, but Hondo can be sneaky when it suits him. And right then, it suited me. The clerk led Marjo to a long room, where the floor was covered in circular pits. Just at the entrance, there was a little table with a round blue tray offering yolk and fruit tarts. Of course, I helped myself to a few, and let me say that they were very tasty, in case you are wondering. Just then, a trio of Cayuso walked past me. One of them turned and gave me a suspicious stare. I returned a wide and friendly smile. The Cayuso narrowed his eyes. Did I look so shady? I do not know. But I do know from personal experience just how ferocious the Cayuso can be, and I had no desire to provoke one. Yogurt tart? I said, waving a hand at the tray. They are very fresh. Rudely, the Cayuso turned away without even a reply. What has happened to common courtesy, I ask you? But no matter. I had much more important things to worry about just then than the sad decline of manners in the galaxy. Because suddenly, Marjo began to turn around. I could not let her see me. But in the open space of the large room, there was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Quickly, I snatched the tray from the table, heedlessly spilling yogurt and tarts across the floor. I swept the tray up over my head, ducking so my face was covered. Then I fell in line behind the Cayuso, hoping that the upturned tray would look like the wide-brimmed war helmet these fierce warriors favor. It must have worked, because Marjo shrugged off whatever instinct had made her look around and continued with the clerk. The last Cayuso in the group noticed me. "Are you sure you won't have a yogurt tart?" I asked him, offering the empty tray. "Oh, look, they're all gone now. Oh, well, it is your loss. You sleep, you weep, as they say." He grunted and rudely brushed me back. But I was not upset. My deception had worked. And I saw that Marjo had accompanied the clerk to a spot that was roughly in the middle of the room. As I followed, I passed the first of the circular pits. I glanced down. The walls of the pits were ringed entirely with black and shiny safety deposit boxes. They went down as far as I could see, disappearing in the distance below. But there was a turbo lift, with a short guardrail hovering half a meter or so below the edge of the pit. The next pit I passed was in use, way, way, way below. I saw a little blue narqua opening a box. As I watched, she looked up and glared at me, holding her hand over whatever personal treasure she was placing in there. I waved to show her I intended no harm. She could keep her secrets. I had bigger barra fish to fry. Then I continued on my way. The clerk was assisting Marjo as she stepped alone onto the turbo lift of the central pit. It lowered instantly, and I watched as her head dropped below ground level. Her duty done, the clerk immediately turned to walk away. I needed to act fast. I broke into a run. Just then,
I saw the long neck of a Kaminoan rise out of an adjacent pit. That caught my eye because you never heard much about the Kaminoans after the Clone Wars. I wondered what this one was up to, and if any of them still practiced their cloning profession. But I had no time to inquire. Reaching the edge of the pit and glancing around to make sure no one was paying attention, I leapt, and I landed with a whoomp next to Marjo. I set the turbo lift rocking. We both steadied ourselves on the guardrails. "Hello," I said. "I imagine you are surprised to see me." She nodded, and then she scowled. And then she gave me a push. I was shoved right off the turbo lift. I hung in the air for a moment, arms flailing, and then I was falling.
Chapter 9. A Robbery in Reverse. This was it. I was falling to my death. Just as they say happens, my whole life flashed before my eyes. And yes, I admit, it was very entertaining viewing. But having been through this a few times that day already, I was wondering if we could just skip to the good bits. But nonetheless, there we were, at the terminus of Hondo Onaka's wonderful, exciting career as a dashing buccaneer of the spaceways. The end. And then, it wasn't the end. No, I was saved. At the last possible instant, Marjo Rilu reached out and grabbed me. And she pulled me right back onto that turbo lift. I was relieved. I was surprised. But mostly, I was relieved. I clapped my hands to my chest. "I am not dead," I exclaimed. "This is the second or third time I have not died since I crash-landed on Guangdin. What a good day this is turning out to be." Marjo looked at me, surprise on her face. "You're excited?" she asked. "Yes," I said. "Why shouldn't I be? I have been saved from certain death. That is something to be excited about indeed. And do not think I am not appreciative to you for catching me. Young woman, you have my sincere thanks." Well, at those words, the confusion on her face only deepened. But I was the one who shoved you," she stammered. "It was my fault you were falling to begin with." "Yes, yes, I know," I replied, waving away her concern. "You shoved me. You caught me. You see, it was the order in which you did it that made the difference. If you had caught me first and shoved me second, it would have been another story, and I would be more upset with you. Well, I would have been dead, but I would have been upset for a moment first. It's these little details that matter most, you know. But you do bring up a good point. Tell me, Marjo, why did you catch me? Although I am, of course, grateful, it does not seem to have been such a wise move on your part." She looked over the guardrail, down, down, down into the pit. Then she turned to me with pain in her eyes. I couldn't do it," she said. I'm not
a killer, no. You have a heart, my friend, and it is not an evil one. You are not the murderer."
"I tried to be."
"Tried and could not do," I said. "You are simply not the scoundrel you led us to believe you were. I did not think you were."
"When did you know?"
"My dear," I said, "it has been obvious to me that you are not very long in this outlaw life. I don't know what reasons have compelled you to try this walk on the wild side, but I don't think the life of a criminal suits you." When she didn't choose to explain, I continued. "It stung, you know." "I was only doing what I had to," said Marjo. "I promise you it wasn't personal."
"Personal," I said. "Do you think that I'm talking about my feelings? No. I mean the zappy-zappy thing, stung. Have you ever been shocked? Ugh, it hurts. Now I know why people scream so much when I do it to them. Perhaps I should dial it down in future."
"I thought you were talking about..."
"The double cross? Of course not. My dear, I admire you for that.
It was worthy of Hondo himself. But next time you double-cross me, please find another way and do it without the zappity-zap. And now I will be taking the key, if you please.
Marjo stiffened as I made a grab for the key, which was clutched in her hand. She moved it away from me as I pretended to snatch for it. And with her attention traveling elsewhere, it was easy to get what I was really after. By then, the turbo lift stopped with the slightest of jolts.
Majo gave me an uncertain look.
You still have the key, I said. And we are here together. So, open the safety deposit box that we have come so far to reach, and let us see these Novian rubies.
She hesitated a moment more, then sighed.
Very well, she said.
I stood just beside Marjo.
She selected the right box, inserted the key. The shiny black drawer slid open.
I peered over the lip of the drawer, expecting a galaxy of riches.
Instead, I saw some old data cards, some cheap jewelry, a small keepsake holo of a woman, probably someone once dear to J.R., maybe his sweet mama. But no Novian rubies whatsoever. I was dumbfounded. Where are the jewels? I said. Where are my red riches? I don't understand. Why would you double-cross us for a box of useless junk? Where are the Novian rubies?
There aren't any, said Marjo. And I recognized the utter lack of surprise in her voice. Then I knew that she never thought there were. She had lied about the contents of the box. There was never treasure there. No rubies, I said bitterly. This is a terrible disappointment. Ugh. You should have let me fall instead of giving such unwelcome news. This is a bad, bad day for Hondo.
Marjo didn't answer. Instead, I watched as she slipped something from her sleeve into the box. I only got a quick glance, but the object was shaped like a little egg, only it was made of a sleek black material and had a blinking light on the side.
I wondered what it did and why she had put it there.
Before I could examine it further, she slid the box closed. We have to go now, she said.
I was promised Novian rubies, I replied.
And there aren't any, she said. I know you're angry.
Let us say that my disappointment currently knows no bounds. Also, I require an explanation, a good one. Then we will see if I am also angry.
I understand, said Marjo sadly. And whatever you do to me after this doesn't matter. But we have to go now, do you understand? First we go, then I'll accept whatever consequences you want. And she activated the turbo lift, so it began once again to ascend. And as we rose up, I thought she looked as though a great weight had been lifted off her shoulders. That was funny. Not in a ha-ha way, but in a curious way. Because I had caught her, and yet she seemed relieved. I wondered then what the real reason for the rush had been. The rush to get there, and now this rush to leave. Certainly it was not to steal data cards and cheap jewelry. Not for a hologram of someone's mama. And we did not even steal those. There was something else at play. But I was too upset about not being insanely wealthy to work out exactly what.
I must say this does not sit well with me, I said. It is a great waste, sneaking our way into such a protected institution, and then to leave with nothing to show for it. If word of this got out, how my reputation would suffer.
As a famous pirate, said Marjo, whatever would the Claudegrants think?
Her face was down, away from me. But was that just the hint of a sly smile? Yes, she definitely felt as though she had accomplished something. But what, I did not know. But I was glad she was not mopey. I do not like mopey people. See, I said, things are looking up. My words were timed so that we had just risen back to the floor level when I made my joke about looking up. We stepped off the turbo lift together.
We need to get farther away, just to be safe, she said, glancing around her. We had the room to ourselves, and then her hand went to the slim controller band on her wrist. Her eyes widened. It wasn't there. Where is my controller? She said.